Welcome to Teaching Writing, Ideas and Strategies.
In the news last week, two articles in CBC News caught my attention. The first one was about universities in Ontario trying to get laws passed to shut down paper mills. Those are companies that write essays for students. The title of this article is "Experts Say Predatory Essay Writing Firms Are Thriving and There's No Law to Stop Them." Let me read you a little bit from the article so you get a flavor of it. It begins this way. A CBC News investigation has revealed how fast and convenient it is to purchase a custom academic essay that can go undetected by university professors and plagiarism software. The term paper was purchased through a self-described custom essay writing service that is based in Toronto but serves post-secondary students across Canada. They continue, the real-life assignment was provided by the Ryerson University School of Nursing, which agreed to analyze the purchased essay. One of the profs then is quoted as saying, "It was very disturbing to me because I would expect to see this paper. Now I feel really suspicious about other papers." The article continues, "Academic integrity experts say businesses that sell custom-written papers are proliferating across the country. There are also concerns that the companies are becoming bolder and more sophisticated as they grow." I almost don't know where to start or where to begin to respond to this article. But let's begin with a little bit of history because that never hurts and it's always a good place to ground our knowledge. I'm going to start with a passage from a book called Writing in the Academic Disciplines, A Curricular History by David R. Russell. Really, really good book, extremely well researched. And he has this to say on page 88. This is about universities in the late 1800s in the U.S. He says, plagiarism was a nagging problem. In the large, impersonal university, plagiarism thrived. Infamous, quote-unquote, literary gentlemen began selling papers to students nationwide, much to the chagrin of faculty and administrators. The term paper industry grew up with higher education, and today there are several companies offering a sophisticated array of, quote-unquote, research assistants. One Chicago-based company, for example, boasts a catalog of over 16,000 papers, indexed not only by number of pages, footnotes, and references, but also by grade level, from high school to graduate school. And this company, like others, will custom write, quote-unquote, research aids for students. This industry was built on the gap between student and instructor, a gap created in part because faculty ordinarily did not teach or supervise writing, did not require papers to be discussed in conference or to be revised. But the industry was also built on sheer demand. Now, he's talking about 100 years ago. My point in quoting this for you is the following. This is not a new problem. Despite the article that was posted in the CBC last week, this is nothing new. It's been with us for a long time, and its roots really come from the industrialization model where the universities grew in scale. The University of New Brunswick, for example, in the 1890s, had 12 or 16 students in their graduating class. That was the scale of the time. When you blew that scale up to tens of hundreds and thousands of students graduating, you have these kinds of problems surface. So I think we've established that the problem is not a new one, to say the least. It has existed on a massive scale for well over 100 years. Why is this news? Now this brings me to the second article from the CBC, this time on how artificial intelligence, or AI, has now generated software that can produce automated written texts that make sense. The title of that article is, "The writing of this AI is so human that its creators are scared to release it." And here's what the article says. Here's the first excerpt. "Feed it sample content, be it a few words or a few pages, and the AI will write what comes next with a coherent, plausible passage that matches both the subject and the style of the source material. According to the researchers, the text generator is able to simulate the style of anything from classical works of fiction to news stories, depending on what it is fed. In one example, the system was prompted with the opening line of George Orwell's 1984, which is the following. It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13. Following suit, the AI wrote, "I was in my car on my way to a new job in Seattle. I put the gas in, put the key in, and then I let it run. I just imagined what the day would be like 100 years from now."
Now, this article takes this technology and looks for implications for fake news and political implications around that. The question I want to ask you is this, though. How novel is this technology? For example, I first heard about the precursor to companies like Automated Insights and Narrative Science back in the early 2000s when a couple of Northwestern University journalism students developed it to cover games, sports games that is, that otherwise would not have drawn a reporter.
The automatic writing of stories has grown since then. In the 2011 to 2016 time period, the New York Times started using what's called StatSheet Network, which was produced by Automated Insights, to write short game summaries and corporate earnings reports. Notice that this kind of software works well in highly structured genres. So when you're reporting on sports scores, there's just certain kind of standard phrases and sentences you expect to read, and this software can produce those. Corporate earnings reports are similarly very tightly structured genres. So the big question for us is this. Can that automated generation of content software be applied to student writing? The answer is it already has been. Consider essaysoft.net. Now, essaysoft.net has 1.5 million users. It's an essay generator. One part of the software helps with rewrites, paraphrasing, and summarizing source material. Another part of it is the essay generator, where you put in ideas that you have for a paper and it starts to form those into text. A third aspect of it is an essay researcher, where it will then go and find the research that you would need for that paper. Another aspect of the software creates a bibliography. And then there's a sort of another interesting piece of it, which is called a shuffler, in which it will randomly move sentences around your draft, which to me seems crazy. And yet they're claiming that there's some kind of a value to that. I just even don't know what students are thinking about if they're using that kind of thing. So all this leads me to wonder, is the solution to essay mills software that writes papers for students? I mean, who needs an essay mill when you can have an app to write your paper? In the CBC article about predatory essay writing firms, the director of Ryerson's Academic Integrity Office doesn't seem to consider this. It seems to me that Ryerson and the 30 other universities and colleges that back the Academic Integrity Council of Ontario are more than a few steps behind in this game. They claim that legislation to bar essay writing services resulted in 70 students being expelled from New Zealand. But there are 170,000 university students in New Zealand, so 70 is nothing, a far cry from the low estimate of 3.5% of students who cheat. That number would be 5,000. My conclusion? Changing the laws about these essay writing firms will do nothing to solve this problem. Okay, what will?
The solution to this problem is really in better assignments. Instructors need to create better assignments. And what does that mean? It means, number one, not reusing the same assignment every term. Number two, requiring students to post drafts of their work and not just hand in the final copy. Number three, requiring students to comment on each other's work and in this way making the work public within the class. So it's not public in the web, but just within the course. Every student can see each other's work. More importantly, instructors need to create meaning-making assignments. Ask yourself this question. What could students write that would really help them learn something new by writing it? In the CBC article, what could those nursing profs have asked their students to do that would have been meaningful for their students? And not just an exercise for displaying or proving that they'd learned something. So here are some ideas that those nursing profs might consider. Number one, have students work in groups, not as individuals, so that they can take on bigger writing projects. And so you could give them more challenging things, things which are more important to them. That would be a step. Another one, have them tackle real problems in nursing, such as medical care for the homeless in Toronto. That's a real problem in nursing. Get them in touch with those and see what they, as a group, can figure out what to do about that or what kind of report to write about the status of that. A third idea, interview practicing nurses about key challenges that those nurses face, including funding for public health initiatives, for example, something that's on the table in Ontario is being cut right now.
by putting students into communication situations where they both have to learn something and the other people in the class, the other students in the class, really want to learn that, want to know what they found out, then you're not going to get cheating. Certainly not to the same kind of level. To sum it all up then, paper mills and contract cheating are what happens when pedagogy gets scaled up, when class sizes get big, and when writing is used to assess rather than for learning. Thanks for listening. For more information on assignment design, consider listening to an episode I did earlier called the 10-Minute Assignment Tune-Up. To reach me, email me at roger.graves@ualberta.ca, or you can find me at Twitter, @RogerGraves is my handle there, and on LinkedIn.